Benjamin Harrison joked to Elbridge Gerry about their impending hangings. Harrison's weight would ensure a quick death, while Gerry would dance in the air an hour or two. The grim humor barely earned a smile before solemnness returned. These men weren't signing a ceremonial document. They were committing treason against the world's most powerful empire. What we now celebrate as inevitable was anything but. The American Revolution succeeded against staggering odds, creating history's most enduring republic when every previous attempt at republican government had collapsed into tyranny or chaos. Yet here's what's remarkable. The real drama wasn't on the battlefield. It was in the drawing rooms, dinner parties, and dueling grounds where flawed men wrestled with incompatible visions for their newborn nation. These weren't marble statues come to life. They were ambitious, petty, brilliant, and contradictory, sometimes all at once. Their greatest achievement wasn't perfection, but their willingness to negotiate, compromise, and occasionally betray friendships to build something larger than themselves. On a misty July morning in 1804, Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton were rowed across the Hudson to Weehawken, New Jersey. At 10 paces, they exchanged pistol shots. Hamilton fell mortally wounded. Burr's reputation suffered an equally fatal blow. The most plausible account suggests Hamilton fired first, but deliberately aimed high, honoring his pledge not to kill Burr while technically not withholding his shot. Burr, seeing a projectile whiz past, fired back, justified under dueling conventions. This wasn't merely personal rivalry. It represented the only time political differences within the revolutionary elite ended in violence rather than debate. Hamilton had spent 15 years condemning Burr not for misguided principles, but for having no principles at all. By calling Burr the Catiline of America, comparing him to the notorious destroyer of the Roman Republic, Hamilton made the ultimate accusation. Their fatal meeting at Weehawken made a final statement about leadership in the fragile early republic and the consequences of unchecked ambition. In mid-June 1790, Thomas Jefferson encountered Alexander Hamilton outside President Washington's office. Hamilton's financial plan was stalled in Congress, with James Madison blocking federal assumption of state debts. Hamilton warned the Union would collapse without it. Jefferson brokered a compromise dinner where Madison agreed to pass Hamilton's assumption bill in exchange for placing the national capital on the Potomac River. This compromise of 1790 proved momentous, though Jefferson later regretted it. The bargain masked deeper tensions. Madison had been Hamilton's ally in expanding federal power, but underwent a dramatic conversion, returning to Virginia's revolutionary principles. He saw injustice in Hamilton's funding proposal, which let speculators profit from veterans who'd sold securities at reduced values. Hamilton viewed fiscal debates with bold simplicity. America's debt needed firm footing through restored public credit. The compromise averted immediate crisis while exposing incompatible visions: sectional versus national allegiance, agrarian versus commercial priorities. It bought time rather than resolving fundamental conflicts. In February 1790, Quaker petitions to end the slave trade ignited fierce sectional conflict. Georgia's James Jackson dismissed petitioners as infamous innocents, questioning Southern patriotism. The next day, Benjamin Franklin's Pennsylvania Abolition Society urged Congress to abolish slavery entirely. Thomas Scott argued the Constitution restricted ending the slave trade, but said nothing about abolishing slavery itself. Georgia's Jackson offered biblical justifications. Virginia's Madison noted Congress couldn't restrict the trade before 1808, but could discuss gradual abolition. With hindsight, we see what debaters dimly perceived. Slavery would become America's central problem for 70 years, requiring over 600,000 deaths to resolve. The Revolution's egalitarian principles had placed slavery on the defensive, yet false optimism about its natural demise rendered action unnecessary. Through parliamentary maneuvering, Madison's magic closed debate. The House vote placed Southern slavery permanently out of bounds. The window slammed shut. The problem shifted from Congress to churches, becoming a sin requiring purging rather than a political dilemma requiring solution, a decision haunting America for generations. On September 19, 1796, Washington announced his retirement in the American Daily Advertiser. His farewell address would achieve transcendental status alongside the Declaration of Independence. Age drove his decision. A near-fatal bout with influenza in 1790 had weakened him. By his mid-60s, his muscular frame had softened, his posture tilted forward, and a back injury left him unable to sit confidently in the saddle, devastating for America's premier horseman. Washington's farewell address delivered a simple yet profound message: unity at home and independence abroad. His reputation rested less on exercising power than dramatically surrendering it. He was a virtuoso of exits. His military genius lay not in battles won, but in recognizing that the Continental Army's survival was the key to victory. While the British occupied cities, as long as Washington maintained an effective fighting force, the Revolution remained alive. He was a rock-ribbed realist who mistrusted visionary schemes unmoored from practical realities. Death came on December 14, 1799. Characteristically self-sufficient, his final act was to feel his own pulse as he expired. Adams returned to Quincy at 66, haunted by betrayal. Jefferson's opposition during his presidency cut deeper than Hamilton's. They had built so much together. When Abigail wrote Jefferson after his daughter's 1804 death, he misread it as reconciliation, prompting her to unleash years of anger. In retirement, Adams obsessed over Jefferson's growing fame, seething that Jefferson had run away with the stage effect of the Declaration, while Adams led the crucial debates. On January 1, 1812, Adams sent a short note. Their correspondence began awkwardly, but evolved into genuine debate. They argued over social equality. Adams insisted aristocracy was ordained by God in human nature, while Jefferson distinguished natural aristocracy of virtue from pseudo-aristocracy of wealth. Their emotional bond restored, they confronted different memories of their shared history. In a divinely orchestrated finale, both died on July 4, 1826, exactly 50 years after the Declaration. Jefferson died shortly after noon. Adams collapsed that morning and died around 5:30. His last words, "Thomas Jefferson survives." The Founding Fathers didn't hand us perfection. They handed us an argument worth having. Every compromise they struck, every friendship they sacrificed, every duel they fought, every silence they maintained on slavery, these weren't footnotes, but the DNA of American democracy. We inherited their genius and their failures, their soaring rhetoric about equality, and their devastating compromises with injustice. What makes their story essential isn't that they got everything right, but that they created a system resilient enough to survive their contradictions and ours. When we debate government's role or equality's meaning, we're continuing conversations that began in Jefferson's dining room and on Weehawken's dueling grounds. The founders' greatest gift wasn't perfection, but possibility, a republic that could evolve, argue, fracture, and somehow hold together. Their story challenges us. What arguments are we having? What compromises are we making? What silences will haunt our descendants? Democracy isn't an inheritance we passively receive. It's a responsibility we actively claim, generation after generation, imperfect founders to imperfect citizens, in an endless struggle to form a more perfect union.